Hey everyone, welcome back to the 443 Security Simplified. I'm your host, Mark the Liberty, and joining me today is...
I am the Hot Step, CETO, Mr. Corey Nockreina, murderer. Oh wait, that's a bad lyric.
Not murderer. Let's stick with CTO.
As you might be guessing, we have a fun episode today that actually has nothing to do with murder, but we'll be talking about video games.
It's not over yet, Mark.
Today's episode is over. Bye. Let's go ahead and just jump right in. Today's episode, I wanted to do something kind of fun. And it starts with a news update, and then we'll just segue right into the main section, I suppose.
Are we going on a field trip?
We are going on a fields trip.
Will there be ice cream?
There's no ice cream, I'm sorry.
Aww.
Ice cream's for winter, Corey.
I guess I got cookies last episode.
You did. So we'll start with an update on an attack that we talked about a few weeks ago called Shadowhammer.
You didn't say that right. It's like,
Shadowhammer.
Shadowhammer.
We need that movie guy.
We do.
Trailers.
Who has a... We need to find someone in the office with a great voice to talk about Shadowhammer next
what
time.
What are you talking about? I don't have a great voice?
Is that a great voice, Corey?
My producer, who has to listen to all this, just laughed live on our podcast.
Yes. So Shadowhammer, if you don't remember...
I heard a snort, too. Sorry, you were saying?
Oi. Shadowhammer was the supply chain attack against Asus's.
I've been told, because I just went to the APAC partner conference, that it's Asus. And apparently my Asus is not well appreciated.
I'm going to call it Asus's.
Asus's sounds yes. Good. Asai?
Asai's. It's like Campbell, right? Campbell Chemi? I don't know. Their update software was hacked and used to deliver malware to a lot of systems. This was discovered by Kaspersky. I could have just gone on a really bad tangent there. It was discovered by Kaspersky, who originally identified it.
Who actually planted it?
Yeah, who knows? they actually just released an update a few days ago at the time of this recording. Where they went into a rule...
Kaspersky did, by Kaspersky. The way. Asus didn't.
Yeah, correct. Asus released an updated hacked version of their... Kaspersky released an update where they went into a very in-depth technical analysis on Shadowhammer. And part of this analysis was actually analyzing some very similar code found in non-Asus software over the years. So let's go back in time to the year 2012 in December, exactly.
You were a baby back then, right?
Sure, yes. I was still a avid Reddit user and a subscriber to r/games and r/gaming, where I remember right around this time, there was a lot of news about this game called The War Z. This is also around the time where a very popular game called World Wars... I cannot remember, actually. A spinoff of Arma 2 mod that's basically a zombie survival horror game. So this developer...
Not Left 4 Dead.
It wasn't Left 4 Dead. It also had a Z in it. Anyways.
Daisy.
There we go. The War Z was obviously someone trying to hop onto the hype train with another zombie survival game. It turns out when it came out, it was horribly, horribly buggy. Easily hacked. Now it's actually on the list of Wikipedia's... worst video games ever, which is a high praise, I'm sure. They had an issue with just banning people left and right for seemingly no reason. And it eventually came out to Steam, a game distribution platform, if you're not a gamer, temporarily removed it from their store after all the public outcry of just how bad this game was and how poorly it was put together. The game was actually re-released later and rebranded as Infestation Survivor Stories.
Yep.
Rebranded, I'm sure, to get away from all the awful, awful press that the War Z got.
By the way, which just continues the crappy business practices, you know, renaming yourself to hide.
Who would do that? Like Comcast Xfinity.
I also, you know, this is not in the security side of things, which you're going to get to, but they did lots of stupid things, if I remember right. Like it was a paid-for game. You paid a solid price. But then it was probably not the first, but kind of a pay-to-play type game in that they charged you additional to respawn faster.
Yep.
If you, it was just obviously the people behind the game were jerks.
the end of that story, the game actually failed. They took all their servers offline in December 2016, and it's no longer playable. But that is not the end of the War Z's story. Somewhere in the middle of all that, in the middle of 2013, the developers actually hacked, and someone stole all the source code for the game and released it publicly. And a Thai company actually picked up the source code and released their own version of it. A complete clone, a complete copyright infringement, but just in Thailand. And where Kaspersky and Shadowhammer come back into this is that Kaspersky found very similar malware code from Shadowhammer injected into the binaries of this game, this copy of the War Z that the Thai company released. Now, the infection methods were a little bit different with ASUS, whatever you want to call it. They actually injected the malicious code into an already compiled binary, whereas with this video game, they just compiled the code directly into the program. And through their investigations, Kaspersky actually found a compromised version of Microsoft Visual Studio that they think the developers may have used to compile this video game as they were making it and releasing it, and that's how the code got in there. But long story short, there were very, very similar bits of code from these two. I mean, you could classify these video games as a supply chain attack as well, because it's coming directly from the game source instead of...
Do you think it's as supply chain and that it's not the updater of the legitimate game company? Like, to me, this sounds very much like... we talk about if sideloading on Androids or jailbreaking a phone. There's a lot of situations where third party, usually located in an... I won't say countries to be nice, but there's some forum on some site that will give you a free version of Angry Birds, a mobile game. But it's been a stolen version of, in that case, the binary, not the source code, but it has additional code in the APK for that particular game. So using pirated versions of games, whether or not they're source code, is a pretty common way to deliver malware. So
I guess that's fair. So either way, I wanted to use this update as a segue to talk about other big hacks and attacks in video games.
Ooh, I like games.
It's Friday. It's Corey is sleep deprived and...
It's not really Friday, but we'll pretend it is.
Today, whatever. Man, maybe I am too. We need more coffee. Anyways, we're going to talk about video games today. One of the stories I wanted to bring up was actually covered by Wired Magazine last year. And it's about a group called Xbox Underground, which back when the original Xbox came out, I was actually quite a big fan of a lot of these guys because they were really pioneers in like the modding and hacking Xbox scene. And I was really big into modifying Xboxes back
then.
Ditto. The Xbox Underground was a handful of very prominent Xbox hackers starting in the early 2000s through the mid-2010s. And they're responsible for a lot of video game and video game company related hacks and attacks over the years. You may have, if you were a fan of Epic Games, they've released things like Gears of War and the Unreal Engine. You might have had an account with them on their forum and you were a victim of a data breach at some point in time. Xbox Underground, one of their members, was actually responsible for that breach and stealing all the usernames and passwords out of there. In that breach, they actually got a hold of credentials for an Epic Games employee, which they then used to compromise Epic Games themselves. And they made off with a whole bunch of IP, including like a pre-release copy of the Gears of War 3 game before it came out. That one actually got them some heat from the FBI and I think really what ended up with their almost all of their arrests later on. This is probably the thing that got it all started. Another member of the Xbox Underground found a flaw in FIFA 2012, one of the most popular games out there, a soccer game that allowed them to mine huge amounts of the in-game currency, which they then sold on black markets and made millions of dollars over the course of this. Some of them stole early plans for the Xbox One video game console, and then they did successfully build and try to sell a counterfeit version of it. Their eBay auction made it up to $20,000 before eBay shut it down for fraud. But their bread and butter was just selling access to modified versions of games, modified game lobbies for online games, selling cheats to games. Call of Duty was a big one for them. In the end, they were all, over the course of several years through the 2010s, arrested at some point in time, and they received various jail sentences for a lot of the stuff they did. One of their members actually physically broke into Microsoft's main campus and stole a bunch of Xbox One dev kits, which is obviously a huge no-no.
One of the first things I remember, and I think you'll remember this too with the original Xbox, was the original, the Xbox CD player had a very custom firmware. It, if you actually loaded up Xbox, it was a DVD, but if you loaded it, you would get a traditional video DVD playlist partition that would just show, this is copyrighted material, leave it alone. But this particular brand of CD player had a custom firmware that created a partition that was a totally different format than, was it LBA, the normal format we use to load up DVD discs. Mm-hmm. And one of the early things they did was they realized, you know, they hacked that CD player's firmware. And for a time, you'd buy the same CD player, and then a normal computer could load up any Xbox disc, see its real partition, and copy it to another drive very easily, you know, because it was just a special format. And back then, all the groups, Razer, I mean, there's a ton of them, they were all about who could get new games out at speed. And there were cases where entire developed Xbox library games would come out before they were actually officially released. So it was a lot of insider hacks, a lot of press, you know, press get early copies. There were some press insiders that must have shared discs with hackers. I think some were caught. So, yeah, pretty interesting.
And there was actually a lot of really cool stuff you could do with the original Xbox once they found some of the compromises for it. Like once they found the key that allowed you to boot custom firmware on it and get around their built-in protections there, you could turn it into a full media player. Like yep. Mine, I could run DVDs off of it.
XBMC?
Yep.
Which runs on PCs too, by the way.
Yep. I threw a big hard drive in there, which at the time I think was like 120 gigabytes. Massive at that point in time, but it allowed me to save like movies and stuff on it. Obviously movies that I owned and just ripped onto it. Same with Xbox.
It's amazing
games.
How straight a face you have when you say that.
Yeah, no, it's just to back up my games just in case they get scratched.
Backup copies of my own personal DVDs for sure.
And this all kind of brings up some gray areas, I think, in some of these things. So first off, one thing I want to bring up is IP theft is obviously very illegal.
Yeah, we do not agree with that as much as we're joking about it right now.
But what about like backing up your own software? Should that be illegal?
Probably not. I mean, if you buy a music file, should you be able to play it anywhere?
And there's been a lot of headbanging over the course of the years, like when CD rippers were big, you say with music files, where they tried to prevent people from doing that. I think, like, wasn't it an issue with VHS players too, where they tried to prevent VHS recorders from
allowing copying? And we still have it today in HDMI. I mean, the HDMI is it HDCP, which, you know, prevents us from using the digital output from copying media somewhere else.
Yep. And then
DRM, digital rights management. You probably know all about it.
And while IP theft is illegal, should selling cheats for a game be illegal? What are your thoughts on that, Corey?
I don't think so. But the issue is, I mean, all this, a lot of times when these consoles get hacked, it's legitimate security vulnerabilities. When they're rooted, you know, it's often a traditional buffer overflow, some sort of RCE flaw, a privilege escalation that allows them to get root. So while I actually see no problem with maybe cheats, even if it took some vulnerability to allow you to do it, the problem is once you have that quote unquote root, there you can do anything with it. So, you know, there's a lot of people that jailbreak many devices and they do it for the whole sake of homebrew, which I think is cool. Mm-hmm. I love taking a platform. Like, I think it's neat that an iOS, iPhone or iPad, a closed source device that you typically have to either get a special developer certificate or you have to go through Apple to publish anything. It's kind of neat if I want to write my own custom program on a phone and run it, homebrew, that's cool. So there's nothing wrong with jailbreaking to do homebrew, in my personal opinion, even though a lawyer might tell me I'm wrong according to DRM laws. But on the same token, you know, as soon as you allow homebrew, you can allow the pirated apps we're talking about.
Exactly.
So it's kind of the technology isn't the problem, but the way users tend to use it seems to be heavily weighted one way.
And none of these individuals actually got in trouble for like selling their cheats. They got in trouble for a lot of the other stuff they did, like breaking into Microsoft or selling stolen IP or selling the in-game FIFA currency that they hacked their way into.
By the way, do you remember Andrew Bunny Huang?
I don't.
He's actually the dude that built the FGPA, and it was to get that private key you were talking about to load everything on the Xbox required a super sophisticated hardware hack where he had an FGPA. He was literally soldered into the bus of the motherboard so he could actually capture the key sharing, you know, because it was actually, he did things from the chip was protected with resins to make it harder to get into. But if you know anything about hardware hacking, there's ways to get past it. But the chip was well enough protected that he couldn't get into the secure enclave. So he actually had to capture super fast traffic off a bus by soldering directly to the board. And he needed the FGPA because it was such fast data that he needed really fast processing to capture it. So Andrew Bunny Huang wrote a book about Xbox hacking. So it's fast. I mean, he is a true hardware hacking, well beyond my scale.
I owe him a lot. He made script kiddies like me able to go stick a chip on their Xbox and load
XBMC
software.
XBMC install, $49.99.
Exactly. What was it? The Executor 3B, I think, was the one that I bought the most.
Yep.
Very fun stuff.
Fun times. So, I've been doing it since the Nintendo days. There used to be cartridges that allowed you to copy ROMs.
Huh. For legitimate purposes, of course.
Absolutely.
Running
just,
your own
just to back up my copy of Super Mario 3.
Yep. Exactly. So while none of them got arrested for selling hacks, there have been some people that have been arrested for selling cheats. PUBG Player Unknown's Battlegrounds was and probably still is a massively popular game. I think it might have been eclipsed by Fortnite these days, but when it first came out, it was huge. And early last year, over 100 people in China were actually arrested for creating and selling cheats on PUBG. Now, they were arrested for selling cheats.
This is a little different than the original cheats. Like, a lot of the cheats you might be used to thinking if you're an old man, Pop Pop Corey, is like a console single-player game where the cheat might give you a big head or infinite lives.
You don't need a cheat to give you a big head, Corey.
Oh. Bump, bump. I'll give you credit. That was a good one. Although I have to say, I really loved NBA Jam's big head mode. That was one of the best modes in my old school games. But anyways, you know, nowadays games are different. They're online and more importantly, they're competitive. I mean, there's competitive PUBG players. So nowadays, the cheats we're talking about don't just change the game for you, a single user. They change the game for people you're playing against unfairly for everyone. So that's kind of when you asked, should cheats be illegal? I was kind of in my pop Corey mode, but online games are a little different. I don't know if illegal might be harsh, but should users be kicked the heck off a platform forever for doing it? Absolutely.
So in this case, they're arrested for that. And where I'm kind of nodding my head is that it wasn't just the cheats they were doing. In a lot of their cheat software, they actually included malicious code to not just enact the cheat, but to harvest information off their customers' quote-unquote computers. There's an actual Trojan
lovely.
That let them get backdoor access, basically.
That, by the way, is one of the reasons I stopped. I used to jailbreak my iPhone. Now I don't really need to. And by the way, that used software exploits, pretty big vulnerabilities, allowed things like Homebrew and Cydia, which are pretty cool. And back when Apple didn't have some cool features, you had to actually add the feature yourself. But nowadays, there's some Chinese companies that are buying jailbreaks, and they've kind of taken over the jailbreak. So when you're getting these like crack my phone or free whatever or load Cydia, this app that pretty much sees everything you ever do on your phone, you need to be curious how that company is monetizing their their free jailbreak. Or
there are genuine security concerns when it comes to not just like jailbreaking software, but like obviously cracked software and
absolutely
cheats. Because a lot of the time, like these are already coming from relatively shady places in the internet, and the shady people might include more shady software in them as well.
And shady people can fall for it. I'll share a game hack that was kind of, actually you were around during it too, but that is, we know how the hacker did it, but I'll share some of his story too, which involves cheats and hacks.
Go for it.
Well, one of the ones I remember, because to me it was huge at the time, I think I was in support at WatchGuard.
I
loved Valve, who, by the way, was our customer. I mean, who hasn't played Counter-Strike or, more importantly, Half-Life? But back in October 2003, the Half-Life 2 source code was stolen and leaked to the internet. That's a huge freaking deal. This game was not out yet. So everyone was hungry to know about Half-Life after Half-Life 1. So the game was leaked to the internet. And by the way, the guy who did it was arrested, maybe half a year later, May 2004. But Ars Technica has a great article just from a few years ago where they talked to this guy. And the guy's name was Axel Gembe, and I think he was a German guy. And at the beginning, he tells a story of, you know, before he got into hacking, he got hacked himself. And the way he got hacked was he was downloading a key generator for Warcraft 3. If you're into piracy, I think I've talked on one of my video bites that piracy can be bad for you. You don't get things for free. And a lot of these key generators come infected with malware. And this particular key generator had SDBot, which was that actually the IRC bot that was right before ZBot, which was one I did some research on. But anyways, he was hacked by a key generator, but he was kind of a tech-savvy person, so it opened his eyes to the fact that you could hack. Rather than getting mad about it, he actually left the malware on his computer and started poking around to find its command and control. Back then, it was IRC, so it was pretty easy. He joined the IRC server, and he started talking to the hacker, and that's how he, you know, learned about hacking.
Interesting.
Anyways, fast forward, now that he knows about hacking, you know, like every nerd on the internet, he was interested in Half-Life 2, so he started scanning, you know, Valve's network space. It's pretty easy through domains to find out what networks you own. He actually didn't find a ton of machines that they were mostly well protected, but apparently he found one IP that was in Valve's network space. It belonged to some company called Tangus, who made some wearable computer device.
Oh, yeah, the Tangus Wear-a-Machinaman.
I've never heard of it. I have no clue. But obviously, Tangus was associated with Valve because he found a server that was, before he found Tangus, he found that the one vulnerability that Valve had was they had a name server, a DNS server that was allowing AXFRs, which are full zone transfers, asynchronous full zone transfers. So if you don't know, that's bad because, like, while everyone in the world knows WatchGuard.com, our own DNS server may have a lot of little subdomains that are for our own internal purposes.
Super secure, don't connect to this.watchguard.com.
Yeah, that's the one you should check out right now with Nmap. But anyways, hopefully none as dumb as that. But there, you know, there's domains that we might use that aren't for public consumption, and sometimes that gives you additional information. And that's how he found this Tangus server. This Tangus server had a flaw that basically gave him access, but it also had no firewall between it and Valve's network, meaning that, you know, from the internet, he couldn't get the Valve, but if he owned this server, he could get the Valve. So it became kind of a tunnel. He quickly found their primary domain controller. The primary domain controller apparently had a username, a user called Build.
Ah.
I guess the Build username. No password. Not sure why it had no password.
Because it was 2002.
And it must have had enough privilege to, once he got on with the Build domain controller, he was able to pull the whole hash table of all the passwords on the domain controller. Back then in 2004, I'm sure password security was even worse than it was now. So he cracked tons of passwords for the whole organization. And that's how he had access to Gabe Newell's email. That's how he had the keys to the kingdom to install keyloggers everywhere. And it was how they eventually found the Valve software. So just an interesting game-related hack. And by the way, sadly, in some ways, because I'm against hacking in any form, he was kind of a hero of the internet because everyone loved the fact that Half-Life 2 Source came out. Many people compiled it and played kind of the pre-alpha version of the game.
Sounds like Valve was not too happy about that, though.
Nope, not at all.
Maybe he can go in now that, is he back out of jail?
I know, Half-Life 3, right?
I know.
Does it exist?
Yeah. If he's out of jail or wherever he was.
No, we can't beat Trump. We can't tell the Russian hacker to go hack Valve.
Russia, if you're listening, go get us that source code.
Boo!
So there's more than, another big area when it comes to video game hacking is, or I guess gaming in general these days, is mobile games. And
yeah, we talked about that a little.
Yeah, you highlighted this earlier at the very beginning of this episode where people tend to be a little impatient when it comes to these mobile games. They tend to come out in regions slower than others, like when Pokemon Go is a good example. Massive game when it first came out. But when it was launched, it originally only came in the U.S.
U.S. only, peeps. Sorry, Australia. Ha ha.
And Australia and New Zealand.
Oh, oops. Sorry, Asia.
Exactly. And because it was so massively popular, everyone else in the world really wanted to play it.
Yeah,
and
I
so
would too.
They were resorting to sideloading it, which on Android, it means installing apps from untrusted locations where you can then go to a website, download the APK directly and install it.
And Android makes it pretty easy. You do have to go disable a little toggle to allow sideloading. But unlike the iPhone, which you literally have to crack or load a developer cert to do,
yep,
you can do it pretty easy with the Android device.
Now, obviously, the bad guys abused this and started hosting copies of the game on their servers that were injected with malware.
Nothing's free, guys.
Exactly. Because it's actually really easy to decompile and recompile an Android application.
The APK is just like a Java packet, like a zipped
Java package. Yeah. So they hosted copies of Pokemon Go that had Trojans in them, which could then like keylog your phone or overlay attack to steal your credentials. This happened again with Mario Run, another really popular game, one of Nintendo's first mobile phone games, where it only came out in certain regions. And of course, people abuse that in order to install malware on folks' phones. Now, you mentioned certificates. We've talked about this before, like on our episode where we chatted about Facebook abusing Apple's developer certificates for their research app.
Yep.
There were also companies using stolen enterprise certificates to host their own unofficial app stores, where you could go and buy, or not even buy, get a cracked version of, say, Flappy Bird or whatever that normally costs $6.99 on the Apple Store for free from them. And as you've been whispering into the microphone throughout this episode, nothing's free. And so these versions actually come with malware included on them too. So there's real dangers when it comes to sideloading applications and being impatient and using unofficial releases too.
Yep. And by the way, I think that's probably some of our favorite game hacks, but there's been tons. I mean, one thing I've said, and I think I even wrote an article about it, is everyone in security can actually learn from console security, in my opinion. Because of this whole copyright issue with people really wanting to pirate games, you know, usually young people who are already inquisitive and kind of have a hacker's mentality. Everything from hardware hacking to secure bootloaders to secure chip enclaves, consoles almost led the computer world in becoming the most secure devices. But the reason I bring this up is neat game-related hacks. You know, the Wii console was eventually quote-unquote jailbroken or rooted. One of the first roots I remember was one of my favorite games, Zelda the Twilight Princess. I believe there's a flaw in the way it parsed save games, and it was a maliciously crafted save game file that caused a memory corruption. And if you know anything about memory corruptions, they're often exploitable to execute code. There's been recent ones. There's a couple of Fortnite incidents. One was an authentication bypass on the website that mm-hmm. could allow you to listen to Fortnite conversations or use a victim's Fortnite credit card to buy stuff. There was the Fortnite mobile installer.
Yep.
the installer itself, you know, was it for, they didn't want to publish via the normal app stores, Apple and Androids. They wanted to go through their own.
So you had to sideload the installer.
Yes. And the way they made that installer allowed it pretty easy to do what we're talking about, for other people to take the installer and add additional crap to it. Speaking of update programs, you know, we talked about how Shadowhammer passed through an update program for the Asus version. EA's Origin, however you pronounce it, you know, all these game companies want to compete with Steam, so they're all making their own kind of
launchers.
Origin had a remote code vulnerability. It was essentially
really recent.
I think it was a sandbox escape. So you probably know what a URI is. HTTP is one of the many URIs. There could be FTP, there could be file. File's a local computer URI. But if you have a custom program like Origin, you could have an Origin URI. And typically, an Origin URI shouldn't be able to cross any URI domains, whatever you want to call it. They should only be able to load Origin stuff. But there is a sandbox escape where people could use the Origin URI to load files. The GOG game launcher had a privilege escalation and actually 6 flaws, couple privilege escalations, remote code executions, even down to our favorite graphic providers. I'm speaking for myself, apparently not Mark, like Nvidia.
Boo.
Yay. 2080 Ti all the way.
I don't care if it's superior.
Anyways, GeForce Experience is like their kind of desktop app, and it allowed local code execution. So, you know, games are software, and guess what? There's a lot of vulnerabilities, and every time that a console is hacked, there's probably a software vulnerability behind it. And in many console cases in the past, it was one specific game that you actually had to use to get the hack to work.
I remember the original Xbox, it was like Splinter Cell or Mech Assault is what I had to use.
And it was save games as well.
Yep.
I think developers forget when they're thinking user input, oh, this save game is something my game writes. They don't think that, no, if I can load an Xbox disk or if I can load my little memory card from my Xbox, I can decompile or parse that save game and I can actually add user input to it.
And I really think that there is a pretty big overlap between hacker culture and gamer culture because we're all really nerds on the inside.
By the way, back when I was a kid, back in Pop Corey's days, hacker was kind of more, we were trying to reserve it for a good guy term of people that, and it was actually cracker. And it started with game software cracking, but cracker was the one that was used for kind of a malicious person using the hacking skills for the bad. So yes, I agree. Cracking is kind of the birth of hacking, in my opinion. One of the ways I got into computer security and started understanding things like buffer overflows was in a large part because of people that were cracking software.
People named Corey
Disassembly. Nachreiner. who are you talking about? Definitely not me.
No.
I don't know what IDAPRO is.
We'll have to come up with more fun game hacking stories for another episode, too. I want to hear more about Pop Corey's early cracking days.
There are some, even NES had some interesting things that many US Western people didn't know about.
Interesting.
You could buy things from Taiwan even in the 90s.
We'll have to hear about that on another episode. Well, that was a fun trip down memory lane. And what takeaways can we have for this episode? Be mindful of where you download games and
I think we got one. You know, nothing is free.
Yep.
While cheats aren't bad and sometimes you want to use them, you know, there's a lot of games now that have single player built-in cheat systems that are codes. Those are fine to use.
What was it in the Sims? Rosebud to get unlimited money in Sims?
Yeah. And of course, we now have Skyrims that have console commands and you can pretty much do what you want. But realize for multiplayer games, if you're like playing an FPS game and you're using something that can see people through walls and shoot them, not only are you going to get banned from the game for that in all likelihood, but the person delivering that hack to you could be doing something gross as well.
Yep. So nothing is safe.
Yeah.
Moral of the story. We'll have to find a way to end every single one of our podcast episodes.
We're all doomed. Let's do our podcast. It's not going to be on by tomorrow because we're all doomed.
Good exit. Hey, everyone. Thanks again for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe.
Five star.
Unless you're on Google Podcast or whatever.
Five star.
subliminal messages from
Corey. Oh, wait, is that illegal?
If you have any questions on today's topic or suggestions for future episodes, or you just want to talk about your favorite video game hacks, reach out to us on Twitter. I'm at XORRO underscore. Corey's at SecAdept. And the both of us are at hashtag the 443 podcast. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Cheers, mate. Vegemite. Marmite. Something else.
Termite.